I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica. And this is All Things Sensory by Harkla.
We are both certified occupational therapy assistants, and together with Harkla, we are on a mission to empower parents, therapists, and educators to help raise confident and strong children of all abilities.
On this podcast, we chat about all things sensory, diving into special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, overall health and wellness, and so much more.
We are here to provide raw, honest, and fun strategies, ideas, and information for parents, therapists, and educators, as well as other professionals to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of All Things Sensory by Harkla. You're listening to your good friends, Rachel and Jessica.
We have a question for you. Well, we have a couple of questions for you. First question, are you just starting out on your sensory journey?
Did your child just receive a diagnosis of something?
Are you feeling overwhelmed with all of the sensory terminology and ideas? There's a lot. So if you're feeling overwhelmed, we understand.
Yes, there's a lot to take in and it can feel very overwhelming. So we just want to let you know that we are here for you, and it's scary. It's scary. Mm-hmm. And we put together a super short training on SPD, or sensory processing disorder, sensory processing challenges. And it's just an introduction to what it is, why you need to know about it, and what you can do to help.
Yeah, it's a quick 1 hour training. And like Rachel said, we dive into sensory processing disorder. We give you some tips and tricks to help your child right now, today, as soon as you watch it. And then we also talk about sensory diets.
We will link it in the show notes and you can check it out there. Click on it, purchase it. It's super cheap. And let us know if it's helpful.
Yeah, we would love to hear your feedback for sure.
We're here. We're here for you.
Yes.
All right. Let's talk about something today. What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about crawling.
Which Jessica, before we hit record, Jessica was like, oh, this is a controversial topic. I'm like, no, it's not. It's not controversial.
Okay, here's the thing. We don't want it to be controversial because as CODAs and parents, we have seen the benefits of crawling, the importance of crawling, especially in our research and our continuing education that we have done. But recently in social media, it has become a controversial topic on whether children should crawl or not.
A little backstory, the reason why it's quote unquote controversial is because the CDC updated the pediatric milestones. And one big thing that we noticed was that we couldn't find crawling anywhere on their list anymore. And we're super confused by that. And the verbiage is really confusing. Like, we honestly haven't totally wrapped our heads around what their intent is, what their goals are. I don't want to put words in, you know, other people's mouths, but we don't totally understand exactly why and what the rationale was there.
And I feel like that's a whole nother topic of milestones and the changes that have recently occurred. So we're going to stick with crawling. And throughout this entire episode, we want you to keep a couple of things in mind. We are basing what we say on research. We'll link everything in the show notes for you. We're basing it on our personal and professional experiences as therapists in the pediatric world, as well as parents. And then we want to remind you that we're not shaming anyone. We're not telling you you have to do certain things. These are our opinions, our professional and personal opinions. And everyone is unique. Mm-hmm. Everyone's experience is different. No one's is ever going to be the same. And that's okay.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of humans, is we're all unique. And our job here as occupational therapy assistants is to help empower our clients and our clients' families to understand the benefits of these developmental milestones that we feel should not be skipped. And you can choose what you want to do. You can decide what's best for you, but this is why we're here and we're going to stick to our guns. The CDC has not changed anything about our schooling, the research. We're not going to change child development because of the CDC. I mean, humans haven't changed, you know?
No, I mean, we have development. We have what we haven't, exactly. Yeah. Development has not changed. So just remember, this is not medical advice. This is not therapy advice. This is a free podcast. So take it or leave it. And let's do this.
Okay. So why do we think that crawling is essential to child development?
First, primitive reflex integration. When we look at primitive reflex integration, there are several important primitive reflexes that are affected by crawling.
Yeah. The first two that come to mind are the ATNR and the STNR. And if you don't know what those are, we have two podcast episodes specifically on both of those reflexes. So definitely check those out. We'll link those in the show notes. But crawling helps those reflexes integrate or go away. So that way our bodies, our brains can perform those higher level cognitive processes.
Mm-hmm. Crawling also affects the palmar grasp reflex, which we'll get into in a minute, because that dives into hand strength and palmar arches. But I was also just thinking, even the TLR mm-hmm. is going to affect crawling, spinal gallant. I think all of the primitive reflexes yeah. will be affected by crawling, because it is a movement pattern that develops and integrates those reflexes and then promotes higher level movement patterns and learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We love primitive reflexes. You know this if you've been listening for a while. We do have a free webinar on primitive reflex integration if you want to check out that and dive into reflexes a little bit more. So we'll link that in the show notes as well.
Yes. The next reason why we think crawling is so essential is that it develops bilateral coordination.
Mm-hmm. So this is the ability to coordinate both sides of the body as well as the upper and lower parts of the body.
Yeah. And you think about when you're crawling, you're moving both arms and both legs, and that's bilateral coordination, as simple as it can be.
Mm-hmm. So it's required. Bilateral integration, bilateral coordination is required for a variety of life tasks. Almost everything we do in life. Things like getting dressed in the morning when you're putting your pants on. Mm-hmm. How many hands do you use to put your pants on?
All four of them. I don't know why.
When you're driving a car, how many hands do you use when you're driving a car?
Yeah.
If you are not conscious about one side of your body, or if you're neglecting one side of your body, driving a car, playing sports, brushing your teeth, eating is going to be really hard. I mean, how often will mm-hmm. we see kids who are eating and need to cut their potato with a knife and a fork, mm-hmm. and their left hand is just like laying in their lap, and they're not mm-hmm. even aware of it.
They don't have that bilateral integration, mm-hmm. for sure. It's very important.
It is.
Yes. The next one is strength and endurance, because when an infant crawls, this enhances the development of muscle strength and endurance throughout the neck, the shoulder girdle, the trunk, and the lower body.
Yeah. And what's interesting about this, and we'll go into this in the next one that we have here as well, but we have to have that proximal strength, that proximal stability, the control, the strength of the bigger muscles on our trunk before we can even think about writing or holding a spoon or any of those fine motor tasks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Because if you don't have that stability in your trunk, your core, you're not going to be able to sit upright. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't have that stability in your upper body, your shoulder girdle, then you're not going to have any control of your forearm and your hands and your fingers. Mm-hmm. Totally.
Okay, next one, leading into this, development of the palmar arches for fine motor skills.
And this is where the palmar grasp reflex comes into play. We do have a podcast episode on the palmar grasp reflex where we dive into what that is and why it's important. But when your baby is crawling, they're going to put both hands on the ground, and ideally with flat open hands, with their palms down, their fingers open, and that builds those intrinsic hand muscles and develops palmar arches. So if you think about, if you open your hand flat and you put your fingers together and you curl around like you're about to catch a handful of coins in your hand. And you can see all of those arches and curves in your hand. Those are your palmar arches. And if a child doesn't have good palmar arches, that means they don't have good hand muscle strength and they're not going to be able to develop good fine motor skills.
Yeah, you can almost have them like take their thumb and their pointer finger, like they're going to pinch and like pinch something or pinch, hold a piece of paper between those two fingers and have them pinch it and you can pull it out from their fingers. But you can feel their muscle in their thumb. It's called the thenar eminence, but you can feel that. And some kiddos who maybe didn't crawl or maybe who have weak musculature will just have a very weak, flaccid muscle.
Like
there.
It won't be there. It won't be activated.
Yeah.
Do it on yourself right now. Yeah. Put your thumb and your pointer finger together and push them together and feel that thumb muscle and do it on both hands and see which one's strong. My right one is so much stronger, but I'm right-handed.
But also don't like hyperextend your thumb joints.
You want to make an O or a circle with your fingers when you do
this.
So
you want all of those joints to be in flexion or bent.
You can still feel that same muscle when you don't have them all flexed in that circle position, but it's just not as good.
Yeah. I'm trying to figure out which one's bigger, which one's stronger.
Well, you with your ambidextrousness.
Like, I don't know. Okay. Next one.
Okay, so another reason why crawling is essential, why we believe crawling is essential, is it begins to develop visual motor, visual perceptual skills, and ocular motor skills because when baby is crawling, their movements are directed by their vision.
Mm-hmm. So they're trying to identify which direction to crawl, how to navigate the environment, making sure they're not bumping into chairs. And I actually had found a research study when I was going down the rabbit hole for the benefits of crawling. And this article was talking about vision. And I'm going to quote this. It said that findings indicate that visual experiences are intimately tied to infants' posture in crawling infants. And so I just feel like when a child is crawling, they're looking up and they're like, you know, we are standing most of the time and they're extending their necks and they're strengthening all of those muscles in their necks. But also, just from a visual standpoint, their eyes have to track back and forth. They have to look around their environment. They have to converge and diverge. They have to be able to move from one object to another to make sure they're not going to bump into something. Like, there's so many things that our eyes are doing and coordinating with our body movements as well.
The next one is it helps improve and develop body awareness and motor planning, right? So crawling is all about navigating the environment, and this develops body awareness and spatial skills.
Mm-hmm. It also promotes motor planning and it encourages new movements. So a child is learning how to crawl up the stairs. They're learning how to move their body up and over a cushion. They're eventually learning how to pull themselves up into a standing position while they're holding onto the couch. And so these are all new motor movements that they have to learn how to do. And they do this by practicing. And we want to facilitate that crawling so that way they do improve their body awareness and that motor planning ability.
And their ability to understand how to move their body through obstacles and around objects in their environment and how those objects interact with their body, and it just develops all of those spatial skills.
The next one, which is definitely one of our favorites, but it helps to improve sensory processing and modulation.
Yep. So first, you are getting a ton of proprioceptive feedback to your joints and muscles when you're crawling.
Mm-hmm. You're getting a lot of tactile input to the hands, which should ideally be open, and the knees and the feet and the toes as well.
Yep. And then, of course, you're getting a lot of visual input because your vision is directing your crawling and you're moving through your environment. Maybe you're bumping into things. Maybe you're hearing things and turning to look at things while you're crawling.
Mm-hmm. There's so many opportunities for sensory processing here. Mm-hmm. And we always like to use crawling as like a calming and organizing strategy because it does provide so much of that proprioceptive input.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly. Last one goes right along with muscle strength and endurance that we already talked about, but crawling really does help to develop posture and postural stability.
So development of postural musculature required for future upright posture while walking and swinging and bouncing, this kind of goes into that research study that we found that we'll link. But if a child is sitting on an open swing and they are struggling to like activate their core and maintain an upright position, they're falling down and they're falling out of their chairs in the classroom, then they're not going to have that adequate postural control. And so that's where crawling comes into play. I don't know if you guys listening have crawled recently. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Like it takes a lot to crawl as an adult.
Yeah, it takes a lot of work to move your whole body like that.
Yeah, you're working a lot. You're working your entire body.
Mm-hmm.
So try that.
I think we didn't mention this at the beginning, but I think it's important to note that we also understand there are some diagnoses and some medical conditions that do prevent some children from crawling because it's just they're not physically capable or it's not medically safe, it's dangerous. Mm-hmm. So we do understand that. We do empathize with that. So this episode is geared towards those infants, those babies who don't have those underlying medical conditions that prevent them from crawling safely.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's important to know.
So, okay.
But for a lot of the kiddos, a lot of the families listening, crawling is appropriate and expected. And so I think that you, the parent, can identify if this is meaningful for your child, which hopefully it is.
Yeah, totally. So the question we like to ask as therapists, as pediatric occupational therapy assistants, is why is the child not performing a typical crawling pattern, or why did they skip crawling?
And just real quick, a typical crawling pattern is on hands and knees using asymmetrical patterns. So their left arm is going forward with their right leg, mm-hmm. and then their right arm is moving forward, and then their left leg.
And they're staying on their knees. They don't have what we like to call the janky crawl, where one leg is like splayed out and they're on their foot instead of their knee. Or maybe they're consistently doing a bear crawl on their feet and their hands instead, or like a scooting type of crawl.
Gone bum.
Yep. We want that hands and knees. Hands are open and flat on the floor.
Pointing forward.
And honestly, as an infant begins crawling, their fingers might be tucked a little bit as they first start learning that weight bearing. So initially their hands might be curled a little bit, but they should progress to open flat hands. And we want that reciprocal crawling pattern, left, right, left, right. Just like when we walk.
Yeah. I think it's also important to note that oftentimes when a baby is starting to crawl and learning how to crawl, they could possibly have a janky crawl. They could possibly do bear crawl. They could possibly do all of these wonky crawling patterns, which is normal.
Yeah.
But we want that to develop into that proper crawl, ideally.
Once they master it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Okay, so we want to figure out the why they skipped crawling or why they're not crawling in that typical pattern. Is there an underlying muscle weakness or tightness?
Did the child or does the child have torticollis, which is tightening of the neck muscle, the sternocleidomastoid?
Going along with that, does the child have tethered oral tissues like a tongue tie or a lip tie?
Is there an underlying sensory processing or modulation deficit?
What is the child's muscle tone like? Do they have low tone or do they have high tone?
Are there any other gross motor or fine motor delays to look into?
Is there a neurological condition or another neurological or medical diagnosis?
Maybe there's a visual deficit we need to look into.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different reasons why the child might struggle with crawling. And in the clinic setting, our team would perform a standardized assessment to identify those underlying causes, and then we would create our treatment plan, and we would put together activities to facilitate crawling and do more bilateral coordination activities.
As a parent listening to this episode, it's important to advocate for your child if you're not seeing this milestone starting to occur. And so generally, we want to say like 7 to 9 months is when we would see crawling begin and kind of get the hang of it, but also look at the child's history. That's why it's so hard to say, like, oh, the child should be crawling by this age, because every child is so different.
Mm-hmm. We didn't list this in our questions about why, but if the child was born prematurely, mm-hmm. chances are they're not going to crawl in that same age range.
Exactly.
It'll be later.
Their adjusted yeah. age for sure.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to just talk to your pediatrician, ask these questions, but know that if they aren't validating your concerns, you're more than welcome. We recommend getting a second opinion. Find someone who will listen to your concerns and who will help get your child the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. We really truly believe in early intervention. The earlier that we can help our children meet these milestones, if they're not meeting them, then we see better results. It's mm-hmm. we don't like wait and see. We no. like, what's the other? Someone else had a really great way of saying that, and I don't remember who it was, but it was like, instead of wait and see, it's
when in doubt, rule it out.
No, because that's yours. It was something else. I don't know. We'll think of it okay. later. If the person's listening and you're like, oh yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. That's my saying. Here it is. Let me know.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Maybe you are listening and you have an older kiddo who skipped crawling and you're like, oh no, I've ruined my child forever.
That is absolutely not what we're saying.
Not at all what we're saying. It's not too late. There are still things that you can do to help them. And chances are they're going to be thriving anyways, mm-hmm. right? Yes. But it's important to know that crawling is a beneficial skill for kids and adults of all ages. Mm-hmm. So here are some things that you can do.
The first one would be to check out primitive reflexes.
Yeah.
You know, if they skipped crawling, let's take a look at their primitive reflexes. Do they have some primitive reflexes that are retained that we can put together a program to integrate those reflexes, which will then set them up for better success? We have, like Rachel said earlier, we have a free webinar on this, but then we do also have our full-length digital course where we teach you how to test and how to integrate primitive reflexes.
The next thing is you can set up obstacle courses that require crawling through things like tunnels or over pillows, uneven surfaces, up and down. Tons of different ways that you can incorporate crawling into just some fun obstacle courses. And the goal is that the child doesn't necessarily know that they're working on an area that's challenging. It's just fun and it's play because that is their occupation. So set up some obstacle courses and have your kid set up some obstacle courses to try it out.
Yes. If your child enjoys ball play, like playing ball, then get into that crawling position. We call it 4-point quad, that crawling position on hands and knees, and roll a ball back and forth, whether you're crawling while you're doing it, or maybe you're just holding that crawling position for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. Crawl forwards, crawl backwards, side to side, mm-hmm. crawl to the beat of the metronome.
Ooh, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. Yes. Play hockey or soccer while you're in that crawling position.
Crawl to the dinner table from the living room before meals, which, you know, will kill two birds with one stone. It will help prepare them to sit at the table. It's going to give them some good sensory input, but it's also going to be a good way to work on those crawling skills.
Just be like, all right, what animal are you going to be to get to the dinner table today? Are you going to be a fox or a deer?
And don't forget to come up with your own animal and crawl to the dinner table yourself as well as the parent.
Yes. Yeah. Do it with them. It makes it that much more fun. Also, if you are really, truly concerned about any of these areas that your child might be struggling with, we always recommend getting an OT eval, because that in-person therapy will win hands down over anything else.
Definitely. Yep. Okay.
Oh, you found another really cool research thing here, right?
Yeah. So it's about stroke patients, which we don't work with patients who've had strokes, adults at least. And the research is showing that, I'll just read what I found, but it says the crawling exercise with the wrist-hand orthosis on is more effective than the routine therapy for the function of upper limb in stroke patients.
So the wrist-hand orthosis is a rehab device mm-hmm. that helps stroke patients regain function.
Mm-hmm.
And so crawling is used as a rehab technique for yeah. stroke patients, which is so interesting. You know, you think about a stroke or even a TBI,
mm-hmm.
and you have so much brain trauma that you do kind of have to go back to those developmental
movements. Yeah,
those developmental movement patterns to regain function and connect both sides of the brain and connect those neural pathways for these individuals in rehab. And crawling is just one of the best ones out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listen to our episode with Karen Pryor about neuroplasticity. It's a good one. We'll link that too. Mm-hmm. There's so many things that we have to link now because we're over 200 episodes and we've done an episode on almost everything.
Yes. So the show notes have everything you need to check out the research and check out why we believe crawling is so important. I feel like reiterating and reminding y'all that, you know, this is our opinion. This is our opinion based on research and experience, and you can take it or leave it.
Yes, you can.
You didn't have to listen to this episode. If this episode made you upset or triggered, that is not our intention at all.
But if it did, maybe ask yourself why.
Sure. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
I do want to say, if you're feeling inclined to send this podcast to someone who you feel could listen, do you have a grandparent who maybe doesn't understand the importance of crawling? Do you have a friend with some kiddos who maybe aren't crawling yet? And you're like, hey, you know, I just listened to this great episode and it really helped me. And I thought of you. And, you know, be kind, because it's a sensitive subject, of course, these days, everything is. But share this episode with people who you feel could benefit.
Yes.
Kindly.
Yes.
Thank you.
We're so happy you are here with us. If you have questions or concerns, feel free to send us a DM on Instagram at All Things Sensory Podcast.
Feel free to send this episode to the CDC.
Ha ha! Ooh, what if it goes viral? They're going to come after us.
Why? We didn't do anything wrong.
It's a whole nother topic. Let's not even go there. All right. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you. We will chat with y'all next week.
Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla.
If you want more information on anything mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get the show notes.
If you have any follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes, or message us on our Instagram account, which is at harkla_family or at All Things Sensory Podcast. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us there.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla. Whether it's for one of our digital courses or one of our sensory swings, the discount code SENSORY will get you 10% off. That's SENSORY.
Head to harkla.co/sensory to use that discount code right now.
We are so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world. While we make every effort to share correct information, we're still learning.
We will double check all of our facts, but realize that medicine is a constantly changing science and art.
One doctor or therapist may have a different way of doing things from another.
We are simply presenting our views and opinions on how to address common sensory challenges, health-related difficulties, and what we have found to be beneficial that will be as evidence-based as possible.
By listening to this podcast, you agree not to use this podcast as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or your child.
Consult your child's pediatrician or therapist for any medical issues that he or she may be having.
This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast.
Thanks so much for listening.